This is a recording of ISIS International from the Commission on the Status of Women, held in New York in March 2010.
ISIS International, documenting feminist visions, creating critical communications, and strengthening social movements.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
It's really wonderful to see this sitting room only turnout. I'm Carolyn Byerly. I teach at Howard University in Washington, D.C. I'm a former radical media activist in my early years. I turned my work as a journalist into the service of the movement, the anti-violence movement in the 70s. But in my academic work now, I try to work closely with women in the grassroots. And I know many of you, either through email or other connections, through that work. What I want to talk about this morning is something that I think has gotten been neglected as a topic by our activism, and that is policy and regulation. Excuse me. I'm not saying that none of us is working in the grassroots is attending these things related to the regulation of media, but I'm saying that we haven't given it very much discussion. We haven't built a strategy either at national or international levels. And I think that women like myself who do research around women in media have given it too little attention in our scholarship. So what I would like to do today is sort of map out what I think is an approach, tell you a little bit about the work that I've been doing the last few years in trying to affect federal policy at the, here in the United States, and then suggest a couple of things that I think the movement might do to really begin to approach something that is incredibly important to all of us. I think that what I want to start out with is why should we care about media regulation and policy? I think that who own the media and who make policies about the media are incredibly important because it determines essentially, and I'm talking mainly about mainstream media, which is what I am concerned mainly with, and my own work is focused mainly on broadcast, so I hope I've got some affinity here in the room for that. But I think that policy determines whose interest the media will serve. Is it going to serve the corporate interest, the interest of the powerful, or is it going to serve the public interest? I think it also policy determines who will be employed. A large part of our women's movements everywhere has been concerned with women's employment and status in the media. Ownership and policy determine these things. And it also is very involved with setting policy and a value system that will determine what ideas circulate, whether our issues and concerns are covered, whether our images are the images that we want to see in the media. We also need to be concerned with regulation and policy because the telecommunications industry, which is the spine, the backbone of media globalization, of global capitalism, is really the most, second only to the pharmaceutical industry, the second largest revenue getter in the world, the telecommunication industry. That's cell phones, that's new technologies, that's traditional broadcast, that's newspapers. And I think that if women neglect the regulations that govern how telecommunications are owned and operated, that we are essentially making our own work and lives, we're marginalizing them. So where do we start? I suggest that we think of it a strategy as at national levels to start with. And I think that, excuse me, that those of us who are concerned about these things and working in these, begin to work in these things, find ways of networking. But I do think that national policy is the place to start. I think we want to ask, how are the media organized in my country? How are they organized? Are they commercial and private for the most part? Individual companies owned privately? Are they financed through public revenues? Are they state controlled? How do they interact with each other if they are more than one of these? I think we need to ask, how are media companies licensed and regulated? How does national level legislation, in other words, interact with agencies who are responsible for actually carrying them out? Which laws govern media regulation and which agencies? And where does gender fit into regulation? And it's harder to find this. Here in the US, when we began to ask these questions a few years back, we found that it was that our own media policy and regulation were very invisible, and they weren't transparent at all, so we had to begin to take steps to change that, and I'll talk about that momentarily. Within the US, over the last, I would say, 5 to 6 years, there has been a small group of women's activists working together with a broader coalition of public interest lawyers and activist groups, media activist groups, involving both men and women, trying to address both gender and race issues in our media. Ownership particularly has come into focus. Ownership within the United States has a fault line around gender and race. I think most of us know that there has been a concentration of ownership since the Telecommunications Act was passed here under the Clinton administration in 1996, which greatly deregulated media industries and has led to what we've all heard of as the 5 to 6 large companies that own the majority of the media. And I think it isn't just within the United States. Many of you living in other countries feel the extension of those companies as well. So the first thing that we tried to do was to begin to talk to each other about how we wanted to work together. And I want to say a little bit about the gender part of this. My work came in around 5 years ago, when I began to be involved with the media reform movement and the women particularly working in it. The woman who represents National Organization for Women before the FCC, Federal Communications Commission, which is our regulatory body, is named Angela Campbell, and she's one of my heroes. She is the director of the Institute for Public Representation at Georgetown Law School in the District of Columbia. She also represents a lot of other citizens' groups. And she began to sort of take apart the laws and where they related to women and to begin to speak out before the FCC and some other bodies. She got me involved in turning my scholarship into a way of generating data that can then be used by the activist movements. So part of what we've suffered from, I think, with regard to ownership and regulation issues is that we don't really, first of all, it seems like so big, where do you start? And second of all, we don't have very much information. We are an information-rich society, but when it comes to the things that would really serve our interest the most in terms of the media systems, we don't know very much. So we began to do things like request the FCC make data about ownership visible to the public. And I took their raw figures and I boiled them down to look at ownership along race and gender lines. And I was one of the people who discovered that and did research on the fact that within the US, only 5% of the broadcast industries are female owned. And I think that's outrageous. Non-white people own approximately 6% of the broadcast industries. That's also outrageous. I think within this context, within my own national context, we have what I call both a women's rights and a civil rights emergency. The other thing is that once you start to work in regulation and ownership, you have to actually begin to make interventions in some way. You have to find ways to comment upon the work that the government is doing or the regulatory agencies are doing. So you have to know when and where to do that. You have to know how to get information about public hearings, the comment periods. You have to know who's doing what. You have to begin to build alliances. So over the last few years, I've been able to testify before the FCC a couple of times, presenting my data for my studies on women's ownership. I've been able to make written comments a few times. And as far as building a strategy goes, and my time is running out, so I want to...
3 minutes.
3 minutes, okay. I want to say that making comment to public agencies, at least in nations where it's possible to have a way to do that, should be done by people at the grassroots level who can really speak from the heart about what it means to have more content related to their lives in the media. Those of us who are professionals have a role to play because we need to make the structural issues around regulation, laws, and ownership more visible, particularly women who have either yourselves jobs within mainstream industries, or you know others, you have friends who have jobs. These issues are not covered. The large corporate media don't report on themselves. They don't report on their bad deeds. So you have to find strategies and ways to get to rescue that news and get it out to people. I think that the last thing that I'll say is that it's not impossible to build working relationships with governmental bodies. As someone who has worked mainly on the outside for most of my life, trying to make changes as an advocate, I have found it heartening to be able to work with the FCC staff here in Washington to do things that will make a difference as far, for instance, as information, how information is conveyed. I met with them last, Angela Campbell and I actually met with FCC staff last March, just about a year ago, and we made recommendations for how they should begin to collect information on women and racial minorities, and how they should, they've never had an online form, we recommended they put their form and reporting system online. And I went back and I gathered more information about some other things for them. And I always try to be very constructive and professional in my interactions with them. And I found that they basically adopted all of those recommendations. There's now an online form and reporting system that incorporates most of the things that Angela and I recommended that will make ownership issues around gender and race much more visible within the United States, and that information will then enable those of us working at the grassroots to have the information that we need to develop more coherent strategies. And I should say that the industry, when they saw that all this was happening, got together and they filed a lawsuit to stop it, and it's still in court. The other thing about when you confront regulation and policy you have to be prepared for is that kind of a backlash. The wielding of enormous power to stop citizen action in their own interest. And I think that the last thing that I will say is that we have to begin talking more actively as women about our advocacy roles and social change roles around media regulation. We have to have a long-term vision, but a short-range, very practical strategy for how we're going to achieve it. And a nation-by-nation strategy is what I would suggest for a starter. And I'm very happy to talk to more of you. Maybe some of you are already doing this.
Thank you. Thank you.
This speech was brought to you by ISIS International. For more audio reports, please tune into the ISIS website at www.isisinternational.org.